Arguably, the most dramatic moment in Chumash was when Yehuda stands up to Yosef. Now, the drama has been building for a long time now. The brothers, many years earlier, sold their brother Yosef to slavery. They hadn't heard from him for 22 years. They come down to Mitzrayim primarily to purchase food, but they're also aware that their brother Yosef is there, and part of their intention is to redeem him for any cost. They search high, they search low, they can't find him. But as soon as they come to Mitzrayim, they meet this viceroy who speaks with them in a very harsh manner. Diber imam koshos. He was very, very tough with them. Not only was he tough, he accuses them of being spies. He comes up with all types of charades. He demands keeping them or keeping one of them. Then they get framed, they get caught with their money. He puts Shimon in prison, sends them back to get their brother. Then they come back, he catches them again. And at that very moment, it looked like Yehuda was either going to kill Yosef or there was going to be a major, major confrontation. Vayigash elav Yehuda. Yehuda confronts Yosef. And at that point, Yosef says the infamous words, the famous words, Ani Yosef, Ha'od Avichai, I am Yosef, is my father still alive? And at that moment, Chazal described the busha, the embarrassment that the brothers felt was inexplicable. They had just realized the extraordinary, terrible, egregious act that they had committed. They then realized that this man in front of them all the while was their brother, and the embarrassment was so intense, and the pachad that they felt was so, again, overwhelming, that they literally didn't know what to do with themselves. And Yosef, recognizing the fact that they were in great pain, recognizing the fact that they were in fear, said to him, Divrei Tanchumim. He said words of consolation. And the Pasuk describes what the words were. Va'ata lo atem shalachtem osihena. It was not you who sent me here. Says Yosef to the brothers, it wasn't you who sold me into slavery. Kim elokim, it was Hashem. Ve'isemeni la'av la'paro. He made me for a father to Paro, ul'odon l'chol beso, to be a master to all of Paro's house. U'moshe b'chol eretz Mitzrayim. Hashem wanted me to be the ruler over Mitzrayim. It wasn't you who sent me down here, it was Hashem. And the Sfuno explains exactly what Yosef was saying. Yosef was saying, don't you see this is miraculous? What are the odds of a slave becoming the most powerful person in Mitzrayim? He had control over everything. And literally, with the exception of the actual crown, he was literally the king of Mitzrayim. What are the odds of a slave from the depth of the depth rising to such heights? But not just a slave, he was a Jew. The Mitzrayim even then hated the Jews. There was a rule in Mitzrayim that a Mitzri could not sit at the same table as a Jew. What are the odds of a man being thrown into a prison of the Sar HaDabochim? The man who was his master was the head butcher of Paro. But not a butcher who slaughtered meat. He was the head executioner. And this slave found disfavor in the eyes of that executioner, and he was put into that prison. And in that prison he remained for 12 years. What are the odds of that man, a Jew, a prisoner, in the depth of the depth, rising to such heights with such a speed? Obviously, it's miraculous. Obviously, it's the Yad Hashem. Says Yosef to the brothers, just like you see, this is clearly the Yad Hashem, clearly beyond any human intervention, clearly beyond anything a person could do, it's clearly the Yad Hashem. So too, you should know and understand the fact that I was originally sold as a slave was also the Yad Hashem. Just like this is miraculous, so too the fact that I was sold as a slave into Mitzrayim is miraculous. You had nothing to do with it. It was completely Hashem. Okay. Now those were the words of Tanchumim that Yosef spoke to his brothers. And here's the problem with them. The problem is, they're not true. Meaning, the brothers clearly did something wrong. What they did wrong was their intentions were to either murder their brother, or their intentions at best were to sell him as a slave. Don't tell me, Hashem, don't blame God for your mistake. You failed. You sold me into slavery. You wanted my death. Don't go blaming God for your mistakes. As a matter of fact, this is the classic taina that Rishonim always have. Throughout the Gemara, you'll see over and over, every Rasha and his brother says, Hashem, you run the world. Obviously, you wanted this. Obviously, there's no complaint against me. The Ramban says it starts with Paro. Paro said, listen, you promised Avram. You promised Avram that his children were going to be enslaved. What do you want from me? All I did was your will. If it came to be, it's because you wanted it. Don't blame me. And Chazal tell us that's obviously not an excuse, because your intentions are the key. Your intention was not to fulfill the will of Hashem. Your intention was to enslave the Jewish people. Your intentions were wicked, and therefore you're punished. So how could Yosef possibly say to the brothers, it wasn't you, it was God? There's no question. The brothers knew it was Hashem. Yosef knew it was Hashem, but that's not the issue. The issue is, what were your intentions? What were you meaning? What did you bring to this? And what the brothers brought to this was actually either murder of their brother, or at best selling him as a slave. And it doesn't sound that Yosef did anything in terms of consoling them. And the words, in fact, do not sound correct. And I'd like to see this evening if we could address this question and understand the answer to it. And to do that, I'd like to begin with a little bit of background. The Chovos Avos, which was written almost 1,000 years ago, lays out for us the basic bedrocks of our bitachon system. He says the basic fundamental concept that a Jew must understand is that you cannot help me, you cannot harm me. There is nothing that any human being can do to help me, nothing that any human being can do to harm me. I am completely, utterly in Hashem's control. And what that means in plain language is, if Hashem decrees that I will live and be successful, be healthy and be well, there is nothing that you can do to change that decree. And the opposite, if Rahman al-San Hashem decreed that I should be sickly, have a terrible situation, or die, there is nothing that you can do to affect that. If you'd like to understand it, it's almost like there's a lucite bubble that I walk around with. I'm untouchable. There is nothing that any human being can do to help me or to harm me. I'm covered, protected by this lucite bubble. Hashem is with me 24/7, throughout my day, with me wherever I go. No human being can affect me for the good or for the bad. And says the Chovos Avos, that's the bedrock basics of our Emunah system, because he explains if it's not true, then there's no concept of bitachon. How could you rely on Hashem? How could you trust in Hashem if other human beings can control your destiny? If my life is in your hands, what good is Hashem? How could I say I trust that Hashem decrees I'll live or die if you control my destiny? Obviously, he says that's silly, it's ridiculous. The basic emunah is that Hashem controls every single action that happens on this planet. There is no intervention between human beings that's under their control. You can't help me, you can't harm me. And this concept, explains the Chovos Avos, is not just in the big picture things. We're usually pretty good about understanding this applies to Misa, to death, to the really big deal issues. But he explains it goes down to the minutiae, and it goes down to so many different areas across the gamut of the human activities, whether it be finding the person you're supposed to marry, whether it be finding the right job, whether it be all of the issues that we're involved in. There's nothing that any human being can do to harm me or to help me. I'm completely guided by Hashem, completely under Hashem's dominion. And when you start working on this concept and you start trying to understand it, you should have a question. And that question is, so where's the Bechira? Where's my free will? Where's my control? If Hashem determines how long I'll live, how much money I'll make, who I'm to marry, and what job I'm to get, whether I'll get the promotion or not, so where is the Bechira? And I want to share with you a fundamental concept. And that is, the human being has no free will, no control over the outcome. The only thing I can control are my intentions. I can intend to do X, Y, and Z, but whether the outcome comes about or not is totally, completely beyond Hashem. What that means in plain language is, I have a job to do. My ishtadlus. We spent a lot of time in Shmuz 51 outlining exactly what my ishtadlus is, but we'll put it in very succinct terms. My job is to go about this world, but derech hateva, in the ways of this world. But once I use my wisdom, once I use my acumen, I decide what's the wisest approach, then I have to fully know that my intentions are X, Y, and Z, but the outcome are completely in the hand of Hashem. If I'm to make $50,000 this year, my intentions will be to make that amount of money. Hashem will determine whether it's true or not. If I'm to make $1 million this year, my intentions are what they are. The outcome, whether successful or not, are completely in the hand of Hashem. Intentions are in the realm of the human's ability to control. The outcome are completely beyond Hashem. My job is to use the world, b'derech hateva, understanding that the decrees are set by Hashem. Now, once we understand that, now it's time to visit that question. And that question is that by all rights, every Russia should be scot-free. Let's imagine the following scenario for a minute. Let's imagine that Reuven pulls out a gun and shoots Shimon down. Cold blood. And Shimon falls to the floor in a puddle of blood, dead as a doornail. Reuven should be able to say as follows: "Gentlemen, you want to accuse me of ritzicha, of murder? Isn't it obvious to you that God runs the world? Didn't you read the Chovos HaLevavos? Don't you know the basics of Emunah? If I was successful in killing Shimon, that means on last Rosh Hashanah there was a decree that Shimon was to die. That outcome was predetermined. What do you want from me? My intentions? So what? You don't kill a person for intentions. There's no Mises Beis Din for intentions. Why are you accusing me of murder? And why are you holding me accountable?" And I'd like to analyze this case and use it as a test case for us to understand the rest of life. So let's look at this case of Reuven pulling out the gun, shooting Shimon. But let's not view it from our normal perspective at ground level. Let's sort of go up a little bit. Let's go up to 35,000 feet and imagine this scene, in a Shemayim, imagine the scene as viewed by Beis Din Shomala, how they view it and what actually happens. So here's how it works. What Reuven said is absolutely, completely correct. On the previous Rosh Hashanah, there was a diyun, there was a judgment about Shimon. Should he live or should he die? If the judgment was that he should live, there is nothing in the world that will change that. Reuven can aim his gun, and the gun will misfire, he'll drop the gun, suddenly the New York City Fire Department will show up in a false alarm. There are many, many messengers, many ways that Hashem will deliver the fact that to carry out his decree. But if the decree on the previous Rosh Hashanah was that Shimon will live, there is nothing that Reuven can do to change that decree. However, if on the previous Rosh Hashanah there was a decree against Shimon, it wouldn't just be a decree of death, it would be a decree of a death by violent methods. Meaning to say, if on the previous Rosh Hashanah it was decided that Shimon should die by violent means, then the situation is a bit different. Why? Because then permission is given. Permission is given to different people at different times. Meaning to say, if in fact Shimon is slated to die by violent means, there are different people who are afforded the opportunity to pull the trigger on that gun. On that same judgment, Reuven was given permission. Reuven has complete, utter free will until he actually pulls the trigger of the gun to be the messenger. If he decides to do it, he will be successful, because on the previous Rosh Hashanah, Shimon was slated to death, Reuven was slated to be the one to pull the trigger, and that exact scenario he was given permission. But if Reuven decides not to be the one to pull the trigger, what's going to happen? Shimon is going to die. Shimon is going to die a violent death, either by a telephone pole hitting him over the head, by a drunk driver crashing into him, by a stray bullet plowing him down. That decree was set. The outcome is completely determined by Hashem. The free will in our situation over here is, Reuven was given permission to be the one who pulls the trigger, was given permission to be the murderer. Now let's in fact assume that Reuven did just that. He pulled out the gun, pulled the trigger, and shot Shimon dead. Even though the outcome was determined on the previous Rosh Hashanah, even though that outcome happened and Reuven pulled the trigger or not, a very interesting thing happens. If Reuven intended for that murder to happen, that outcome is transferred to his cheshbon and is considered accountable. Even though it's absolutely an accepted fact that that exact event would have happened, even though Shimon was slated to die and would have died anyway, if Reuven's intention was to actually pull the trigger on the gun and he succeeded, he is considered the murderer. He's held completely accountable as if he did that outcome. And the reason why Hashem does this is to give the human being the ability to gain schar, to get reward or punishment. You see, at the end of the day, even though the outcomes are not controlled by us, we're given credit for the outcome. If I give $1 million to a yeshiva and that yeshiva continues, that outcome is attributed directly to me. Even though I'm fully aware that had I not done it, someone else would have done it, that outcome is for me. If there's a person drowning in the river and I save them, that outcome is 100% attributed to me. I saved a nefesh b'Yisrael. Even though basic emunah tells us, had I not been there, Hashem would have sent the coast guard, would have sent someone else, that person would have been saved. But if I got lucky, if I was the man on the scene and I pulled him out of the river, that outcome is attributed to me. You see, the intentions and the outcome have this interesting cross point where Hashem will allow a person to gain reward or gain punishment, and if in fact his intentions is to do the action, then he's attributed to that outcome, he's given credit for it, his intentions hook him to the outcome. And this concept requires an awful lot of understanding because it's not simple, and it requires an awful lot of time to let it sort of ruminate, to let it sort of dwell and sort of percolate until you get comfortable with it. However, this brings forth a very important concept. And Sil Sharm explains to us that if you think about this concept called tshuva, it makes no sense. Because I'll tell us over and over and over, you can do an act and you can do tshuva. Says Sil Sharm, that makes no sense. Watch the case. Let's go back to Reuven and Shimon. Reuven pulls out the gun, shoots Shimon. Shimon's dead and buried. 10 years later, Reuven says, "Oy vey, what did I do? I killed a man. Oy vey." And he feels charot, and he claps al chait, and he does tshuva and vida. He does the whole deal. So explain to me what happens. Does Shimon come back to life? "Oh, Reuven, my buddy, I was dead for 10 years, but no big deal. You did tshuva, now I'm back alive. So we're okay. You're okay. I'm okay, right?" It doesn't work that way. Shimon is dead, dead, dead. All of Reuven's tshuva, all of his charata, all of his regret and remorse is irrelevant. Shimon is still dead. But you see, that's the answer to how tshuva works. You see, the outcome of Shimon's death was inevitable. It was not dependent on Reuven's act. Shimon would have died that day by violent means, had Reuven pulled the trigger or not. Had he not pulled the trigger on the gun, it would have been a telephone pole, would have been a drunk driver, but that outcome was slated. Reuven got attached to that outcome because of his intention, his desire. Says in Sil Sharm, if your regret, your charata, equals out your initial intention, if Hashem would be made on you, would say testimony that you feel such horrible sense of regret that it equals out the power of your initial decision, then you're disconnected from the outcome. You weren't responsible for the outcome anyway. That was slated on the previous Rosh Hashanah. You only got attached to that outcome because of your intention. If you get rid of your intention with the regret, you're no longer associated with that outcome. That outcome is, and you are divorced. You're not associated. And explains to Sil Sharm, that's how tshuva works. He says, even though it really doesn't make sense, but Hashem, in His infinite mercy, says there has to be a system of tshuva because the human will mess up. And therefore, he's allowed to disconnect himself from the outcome. And I believe that that's the answer to this question, what Yosef was saying to the brothers. You see, I believe what Yosef was picking up was it was just a little bit too much regret on the brothers' part. They felt a little bit too much busha. And what Yosef picked up on was the fact that on some level, the shvatim, the brothers, took responsibility for the outcome. As if to say they were the ones who sold him into slavery. As if they were responsible. As if they were the ones who really, really did the outcome. And Yosef was saying to him a very simple point. The outcome was inevitable. Look at the simple fact. Look at the end of the story. Look at the fact that I went from being a slave in the prison to now being the monarch. That's a miracle. That's the hand of God. Just like you see that's the hand of God, you have to admit the first part's the hand of God. What he was saying to his brothers was, you had nothing to do with the outcome. The only part you have to do with is the intention. For that you had long ago, you had charata, you had regret. For 22 years you suffered, and the 22 years you did tshuva. I forgive you for it, Hashem forgave you. The only question is the outcome. On some level you feel it was you, it wasn't you at all, it was Hashem. And I believe what Yosef was doing was explaining to them a certain basic of emunah, because as great as they were, on some level they felt responsible for the outcome, on some level they felt it was their hands, their actions that did it, and Yosef was divorcing them from that. Your only element is the intention you got rid of with your tshuva, you're totally clean. And I believe that this concept is very fundamental and takes an awful lot of time to really, really sink in. But it's key to understanding so many issues. The first issue, understanding Hashem's role and my role. Understanding what it means that Hashem decrees on Rosh Hashanah, and yet I'm still obligated to work very, very diligently. I have no right to say, Hashem decreed I'm going to have a very successful year, even if I know it to be true. Imagine for a minute I heard a bas kol. Imagine I'm dominating Rosh Hashanah and I hear a bas kol, Schaefer!
Yeah.
$1 million this year. Wow! $1 million. It's great. So I decide to sleep till 12 o'clock. Sleep late. I'm not going to work hard. Hashem, I heard the bas kol. I heard a heavenly voice tell me, I'm going to make a fortune of money this year. I'm sleeping as late as I want. I'd like to share with you an interesting point. If I do that, I'm going to go very hungry this year. Because Hashem expects a person to do certain things. Hashem decrees the outcome provided you do what you're supposed to do. One of the things you're supposed to do is act b'derech hateva. You're supposed to work for a living. There's supposed to be a normal procedure. The ways of the world, the ways of the world are you work for a living. And if you're going to sleep till 12 o'clock, then what's going to happen is you're going to go very, very hungry. But you see, I have to understand that the outcome is determined by Hashem. The only thing that's expected of me is what's expected. I'm supposed to go out there, work very diligently, work very hard. My intentions are to carry it out. And all the while, I know fully well that the outcome is completely beyond Hashem. And understanding this balance is basic to understanding much of life and basic to understanding Hashem's part and my part. And in that sense, I think this concept is very key to understand. But there's a second concept that's very, very important that comes out from it. And that is understanding what Chazal tell us. Chazal tell us, Ein dover omid bifnei tshuva. Nothing stops tshuva. That means you could do the most egregious, horrific act in the world. If you do a full, complete, proper tshuva, it undoes it. And if you think long and hard about it, you should say it makes no sense. And that's exactly what the Mesillas Sharim is saying. It would make no sense if you were actually the one who did it. If you were actually the murderer. If you were actually the one who ruined his life. Imagine that you took a guy and you brought him down. You destroyed him. He became a Mechallel Shabbos, gave up everything because of you. Then the concept of tshuva could never apply. But you have to understand that your intentions are your attachment to it. The outcome was predetermined. If it wasn't you, it was someone else. Certainly vis-a-vis murder. Certainly in regards to changing another human being's destiny. If it weren't you, it was someone else. You're given the full responsibility because you were the man on the scene. You chose to be the person. Your intentions were to do it. And therefore it's attached to you. The outcome comes onto your cheshbon. But tshuva works because in reality that outcome is predetermined. The only thing that attached you was your intentions. If you disconnect your intentions with the process of regret, with charata, then you're disconnected from the outcome and it's as if you never did it. You have nothing to do with it. And again, the concept of tshuva is pretty, pretty important and not so easy if you're really honest and think about it. But I think there's a third area that this concept is very applicable to. Have you ever heard someone, or maybe yourself, say the words, after what he did, after what I did for him, there is no way in the world I could ever forgive him. I helped him, I put myself out, and the chutzpah, a guy did that act, I can never forgive him for doing that. If you ever hear yourself saying that, and you really feel it in the core of your essence, I'd like to share with you one observation. You do not have a problem with your midos. You don't have a problem with nekama. You don't have a problem with anger. You don't have a problem with seeking revenge. You have a problem with emuna. You have a problem with who runs the world. And I'll explain to you what I mean. You probably had a teacher in third grade who taught you how to take a compliment, right? She said to you, look the person in the eye, smile and say, thank you very much. Don't squirm. Don't say, no, it was nothing. Just say, thank you very much and smile. But I'll bet you never had a teacher who taught you how to take an insult. But the Chovas of Lovas tells us how to take an insult. Imagine for a minute, a man walks over to you and with no cause, no reason, laces into you, but really rips into you, calls you every name under the sun. And he really, really causes you a tremendous amount of pain and embarrassment. And says the Chovas of Lovas, what you should do at that moment is, you should look to Hashem and say the words, Hashem, thank you. thank you for revealing a little bit of my many sins, because he explains those words are not spoken by that person. That person is the messenger, he's the shliach, but there was someone who sent him. Because he explains there's no pain, no humiliation, no embarrassment that you can suffer on this world through the hands of any human being. The reason you suffered that pain, that humiliation, was because it was coming to you. It was slated. You needed it for whatever which reason, but that man is but a pawn in the hands of God. And if you'd like a mushal, a mahadavadoma, imagine I'm speaking to you now, and I'm speaking through a microphone, and you hear the voice through a loudspeaker over there. And imagine for a minute I start ranking you out. I call you, bleep, 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 and you get so angry, you stand up, you walk over to the loudspeaker, and you punch it, boom, right in the subwoofer. Right? That'd be very clever. Very clever. If you walked over and punched me, maybe we could discuss whether it's smart or not, but the loudspeaker didn't insult you. I did. I spoke through the loudspeaker, but I am the one who's insulting you. Deal with the one who's speaking. And says the Chavos Olavos, don't you understand? When a human being walks over to you and insults you, that's a loudspeaker. There's a messenger, and there's the one who sent the messenger. Hashem sent that person, and that message was sent for you to hear, and you're supposed to look at the one who's actually speaking into the microphone and say to Hashem, I understand that you are the one who sent him. And this understanding, my friends, is key and fundamental. And the next time you have a beef, the next time you have a problem with another human being, because he insulted you, because he did you something wrong, maybe he damaged your item, or your parnasa, or your reputation, and you have a legitimate taina, a legitimate complaint, know and understand one single point: God created, maintains, and orchestrates this world. And that pain, humiliation that you suffered was not through this pawn. No human being can touch you, nor can he help you. Everything is directed by Hashem. And understanding, at the end of the day, that nudnik who insulted me had intentions that were wrong, and I may have some words for him for his intentions, but the outcome is not in his capacity to control. It is basic and fundamental to our understanding relationships one with the other. But there's a fourth area, and I consider the fourth area the most important. Let's assume for a minute you decide at some point that you really want to grow in bitachon. That's it. You really want to concretize, really live the fact that Hashem runs the world. And you want to really learn to rely on Hashem. And you want to really learn to trust in Hashem. I'd like to share with you a very important mashal. Imagine the following. Imagine you decide that boxing is a very good thing to do. Listen, it's a good workout. It's a good way of getting in shape. And you decide that you want to learn how to box. And you say to yourself as follows. Listen, it's January. The Golden Glove fights are in June. I got 6 months. I'm going to compete in the Golden Glove matches. Okay, so what do? You head right to the library, and you take out a big stack of books on boxing, from the best of the best. Sonny Liston, Muhammad Ali, you take head coaches, regular coaches, and you start reading and reading and reading, and you become very knowledgeable about boxing. Now, you're not a fool, and you realize you can't get into the ring with just reading the boxing books. And so what you do is you actually go ahead and practice a little bit. So you get yourself in front of the mirror, and you start throwing some jabs, some hooks, some rights, and you realize that's quite not enough. You know, you just can't throw punches in the mirror, so you even get yourself a bag, and you hit the bag, and after 6 months, you're ready to walk into the Golden Gloves match, you put on the gloves, and you walk in. What do you think is going to be the result of your first match? I say to you, you're going to get your head clobbered. And why? Because you can't learn how to box from a book. You have to get in the ring, you have to duck, you have to get hit, you have to learn how to move, you have to learn it in the real action, in the real process of fighting. And the reason I say that is because many people study the Chavos Levavos. They learn the Chazon Ish HaBitachon, and they feel very strong in their knowledge of Bitachon. You cannot learn Bitachon from a book. You can study it, you can understand it, but you will fail miserably because there's only one way in the world to learn to trust in Hashem, and that is in the thick and thin of life. You got to get out there in the ring. You got to be there when you don't know how you're going to pay your mortgage. And somehow you rely on Hashem and it comes about. And you're looking for your Bashar day after day, week after month, month after month. And somehow you see that it's brought to you. somehow you learn to trust in Hashem, and somehow you end up seeing the good by living through life. That's the only method of learning to grow in bitachon. Just like you can't learn out of box from a book, you can't learn bitachon in the Beis Medrash. You learn the concepts, you get familiar with the ideas, but it's in life that you really learn bitachon. And the reason why I say that is because I find it very almost humorous to hear the way people have their big philosophical problems. I claim that most people you meet who have big questions on God are what I call philosophical midgets. How can Hashem do this to me? I was doing so good, I'm learning and I'm dominating. I need this. I need this situation. And I guarantee from now until you leave this earth, there will be many, many bad situations that happen to you, and you'll have many, many tainas against Hashem, and many times you'll say, Hashem, I needed this, everything was going well, I was doing what I was supposed to, and then you threw me this curveball that I need this? And you may even see a book with a title that well captures this very theme. Why bad things happen to good people. He calls it when bad things happen to good people. I would like to answer the why. Why do bad things happen to good people? The answer is they don't. It's false. It doesn't happen. Bad people have bad things happen to them. Good people, Hashem does not deliver bad things to them. Would you like to know why people believe that there are bad things happening to them? Because they don't understand life. They don't understand why they're here. They don't understand the purpose of life. They don't understand what life is about. And as a result, they misinterpret these events and they see these bad things happening to them. Bad things don't happen to good people. Bad things happen to silly people who don't understand the meaning of life. And one of the reasons why we have to go through these situations in life is exactly that. As the opportunity to grow, you get knocked down, you get back up, you get knocked down, you get back up, and after a while you begin getting it. Aha, I see. There really is a God running the world. My atheism is starting to wane. I'm having a tough time keeping my lack of belief because over and over I see Hashem, over and over I see the delivery. But here's the point. When you're in the thrust of it, when you're in the thick and thin, you'll never see Hashem. You'll always have the kasha. You'll have the tremendous question, but it's only when the delivery comes, 6 months later, a year later, 2 years later, then you get it. But we mortals have such a finite vision, such a limited vision of life, and that's exactly what Yosef was saying to the brothers. Look at the end of the story. Don't you see I'm a viceroy? Even you cannot deny the fact that this is miraculous. To go from being a slave to the most powerful man in Mitzrayim, a Jew, to be thrust into this position is clearly miraculous. But it's not just this. This is the end of the story, but there's the rest of the story. Now that you get the punchline, go back and see, just like this is a miracle, every step that led to it is a miracle. Hashem brought me here. Hashem also did the first part. But the only way you could really grow in bitachon, the only way you could really grow in understanding life, is looking at the end of the story. Not every end of the story is pretty. Not every end of the story is good for us in this world. But understanding that I was put on this world to grow, to accomplish, for a few short years, and everything that Hashem does is for the best, whether I get it or not. Most of the time, the vast majority of the time, those things are good for me in this world. I don't understand it now. 2 months later, 2 years later, I get it. Occasionally, there are a few things that aren't good for me in this world, and I won't understand until I leave this world. It's not for this world that they're good, they're for the world to come, but the vast majority of the situations that we go through, at the time they look so bad, and look so ugly, it looks like Hashem is out to get me, and then later on I get the rest of the story, and then it's time not just to understand that Hashem saved you, but to go back and read through every step. And see Hashem every step of the way. It wasn't just that Hashem saved you, Hashem brought you every step of the way. Hashem doesn't just wake up and join you on February 13th. Hashem is with you every day before, guiding you, helping you throughout your life. And the only way that a person can really grow in bitachon is not by studying it, not by listening to Musa Shmuzim, but going out there in life, living life, and seeing the hand of Hashem. And I think Yosef was saying a tremendous lesson to the brothers. As great as the brothers were, as tremendous as they were as individuals, on a certain level they took responsibility for the outcome. And when Reuven pulls the trigger on the gun, he feels so powerful. I'm controlling the destiny of another human being. Look at the power that I have. And says the Chovos Levavos, you're living in a world of delusion. It's a world of fantasy. The reason you succeeded in killing Shimon was because Shimon was slated to die by violent death. Had it not been you, it would have been the telephone pole, would have been the drunk driver. You were given permission. Hashem runs the world in a particular way. If a person wants to go in a particular way, he's allowed to go that way. If you want to grow, you want to accomplish, Hashem arranges things that you're given the opportunities. But if you want to go south, you want to do what's wrong, Hashem arranges that those opportunities present themselves as well. The reason why Reuven was allowed to be on the scene that day was because very likely he had done something earlier. It's not every human being that's allowed to murder another person. The reason he was allowed was because that's where he wanted to be, that's where he was headed, and Hashem afforded him that opportunity on the previous Rosh Hashanah because of who he was. And because of that, Hashem put him in a particularly bad mood that day. He lost his job 6 months ago. His wife threw him out of the house. He was in a really ugly mood. He happened to have a gun. And he happened to see Shimon, who insulted him, maybe cut him off while driving. He pulled out the gun and shot him because that was the derech he was heading in. And Hashem allowed him. Reuven is powerless. Reuven feels so powerful that he controls the destiny of another human being. He has no control whatsoever. That outcome was predetermined and predecided. He was allowed to do it because Hashem allows for free will. At the end of the day, understanding my intentions and my kavana is the only area that's in my control. The outcomes are totally outside my control. That's completely in the hand of Hashem. Allows us to understand so many of the aspects. One is understanding how Hashem runs the world. Two is understanding the concept of tshuva, because my only attachment to that outcome is my intention. If I divorce myself from the intention, I'm divorced from the outcome. And at the end of the day, understanding that no human being can touch me, they can't help me, they can't harm me. Understanding that if you tried your best, you tried to insult me, you tried to steal from me, you tried to destroy my life, you can't do it if you succeeded and you were sent by Hashem. And understanding these concepts requires living. You can't learn these concepts in a book. You have to learn them in life. You have to get the ups and the downs. And as you grow through life, as you accomplish the reason you were put here, you understand life much more fundamentally. You understand life from a much broader perspective. You have a much more philosophical understanding. And you begin to understand that that which Hashem does is for the good, whether I understand it or not. Typically, I'll understand it in the end. But if not, I have enough betachon to understand that Hashem has my best interest in heart. And at the end of the day, whether in this world or the next world, I'll understand why Hashem delivered that. I'd like to close with a story that's a little bit close to my heart, because it happened to me. Just recently, I sat in a principal's office, and I said to the following words. I said, for 9 years, I harbored ill will against you and against this institution, and I'd like to share with you that I have a vastly different perspective now on that. The reason I said those words is because, as you may know, my daughter recently had a baby, and at the wedding, my wife and I were extraordinarily proud, and especially now seeing her as a mother, my wife and I both have commented that we are extremely, extremely proud of where our daughter's at. Mature, capable, from everything that a parent could wish for, our daughter has become, and are literally, a cup runneth over. We couldn't be happier with her development. 9 years ago, I got called in to the principal's office to pick my daughter up because she was thrown out of school. I'll tell you the story. We were in Rochester, New York. I was a Rebbe in the high school there. There was no chinuch for our kids there. We moved from Rochester to Muncie. And I put my daughter, who was then in 7th grade, into the school that I felt best fit the hashkafas, the attitude, the approach of our family. I put her in that school, and 2 days later, the principal called me, please pick up your daughter, she does not fit, there is no room for her in our school. What, she burned down the building? 7th grade, what in the world could she have done? And I came to the office, And his principal told me, please take her home. But please take her home. Okay. So I took her home. Now, what do you do with a seventh grader? So we put her in a school very, very different than the hashkafas of our family. A school we never would have put her into. But that's what we did. Okay. And because she went to a different school for seventh grade, and she went to a different high school. And when she graduated high school, I said to my wife a very interesting thing. I said, do you realize one of the greatest brachas that we had is that our daughter got thrown out of that school? Why? Because as you know, some schools are flexible, some schools aren't. That particular school, while it's in Hashkafa, they're very sharp, they're also extraordinarily dogmatic. It's our way or the highway, and there is no discussion. Happens to be my daughter is very strong-willed, very, very critical thinker, very independent, and had she remained in that school, she would have rubbed very, very strongly against authority there. She would have been jaded by the time she was in eighth grade. She would have gone to a high school that was equal in the same type of dogmatic approach. She would have been, by 11th grade, probably a youth at risk. Because when you're very, very strong and you challenge the system, and the system doesn't allow for challenges, you find yourself in a very difficult situation. But the reality is she wasn't put into that situation. For some strange reason, she was asked to leave that school, went to a very different school that was very flexible, went to a different high school which was even more open-minded. And the reality is, as I watch my daughter now, mother, I couldn't be more proud. I walked into that principal's office and I said, 9 years ago I had tremendous ill will against you. Now I understand you did the greatest favor for my wife and myself. Thank you. But you see, here's the point. 9 years earlier, there was no way in the world that I, with my mortal vision, could recognize the bracha in that. There's no way that a human being could see into the future. In my mind's eye, it was the worst thing that could happen to my daughter, and it was destructive, and more than that, what a chutzpah. I'm in chinuch myself. I leave a city strictly for the chinuch of my children. I put my child in the best institution, and they throw her out without cause. What kind of... what's going on? Hashem, what's the deal? There's something wrong here. What's pshat? And it wasn't until 9 years later that I learned pshat. And my friends, this is the lesson. When you find the Yeshua, and every one of us, after the fact, 2 months, 2 years later, see it, and we see that it was really for the best, it's not enough to say, thank you, Hashem. Then you have to retrace your steps. You have to go back and understand that every one of those steps was directed by Hashem. Hashem was there guiding me, bringing me to it. And it wasn't just the Yeshua. Hashem brought the Yeshua many years earlier. You have to write these things down. You have to study them. You have to understand them. And when you do that, then you start learning life. You start going about this thing called life, not like a robot on autopilot. You start going about this thing called life with understanding, with growth. And you grow in your understanding of Hashem's involvement, and you grow in bitachon, and you live a very, very different life. May Hashem grant us the wisdom, understanding, and ability to put this into practice.